Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we've got a special episode this week.
It's special, all right.
We're going to be talking about George Romero's Survival of the Dead, released in 2009, the sixth film in his zombie collection,
of the dead.
I guess, his Of the Dead series. This is the one movie made by George Romero in this collection that I don't like. I just don't like it.
Yeah, I was saying to you, as soon as the movie was over, I think we might have been getting lunch, I said, man, this might be the first zombie film I've seen that is just completely without merit. Like, okay. It doesn't have any socially redeeming qualities. It was somehow not funny enough to be schlocky, too serious to be, but take itself too serious, not serious enough to really fully engage with it. It had some spectacular zombie kills.
Yeah, and I think there was some social commentary in there, which we'll talk about.
I think it's just mostly a giant 90-minute WTF session for me.
Yeah, me too. And especially, so the synopsis of this movie is that there is an island off the coast of North America, which you might not understand given the accents of the people who inhabit it. Where local residents are fighting the zombie epidemic while also trying to find a cure for their undead family members. Trying to teach them to eat something other than human beings.
Yeah, not even cure, yeah. Just a way to coexist peacefully with them.
Domesticate them, get them just not interested in human flesh.
Sure.
It doesn't go very well,
no.
I would say.
I don't know. In the movie opens up that question of whether it went well or not. Hell, I don't know.
It does, sure. But I wanted to get the synopsis up there up front because this is actually the first time I viewed this movie and got a good idea of what the hell was going on.
Sure. Maybe you can help me then.
Okay. All right. Do you have any particular questions about the plot that you want to
do? I think we need to take care of some business first.
Okay.
We've been running contests throughout the Month of the Dead. First week we gave away Walker StalkerCon tickets. Last week we gave away a prize package that included a copy of The Walking Dead Season 4 on Blu-ray or DVD. Your choice. Your choice of Funko Pop Figures? Popco Fun Figures?
Yeah, within reason.
Which are the kind of... this is not Kawhi, it's the...
They're kind of chibi.
Chibi style Walking Dead figures.
Kind
of. Your choice of Bald Move t-shirt from our Bald Move merch store. And a free copy of my book, which is the Cupie prize.
Mm-hmm.
The Cracker Jack prize of this prize package. If you don't want to wait to see if you win, you can also get it at book.baldmove.com. It's a survival guide, tongue-in-cheek review style for season one of The Walking Dead. Our first winner is Carrie S., which we'll be emailing you to tell you've won, so you can get with us the particulars of the prize package. Next week, we're sweetening the deal. You get all that stuff, plus your choice.
Some fancy extras. Do we want to give away all of the surprises?
Do we? Because I was going to talk about a particular monstrous screen.
Sure.
I was like, okay, what? I thought we were on the same page here, but we talked to our friend Richard at Chicago or at the Atlantic Walker Stalker Con. He's a guy to run ScreenMonsters.com, which is a really cool place where you can get pop art, pop screen, silk screened art.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just got lots of cool stuff around Star Wars, around Walking Dead, around Breaking Bad. The artistry there, I think, is amazing, and he's agreed to give the users their choice of Hypnostalker, which is his tribute to Daryl.
Yeah.
There's a couple other selections. He's got Wings, if you want to the go for the Daryl Angel Wings vest look. He's actually got the sew-on wings that he's replicated that you can get. There's a couple other options. But check out his site at ScreenMonsters.com. Again, we've got some of his artwork hanging in our studio. We're going to have some more soon. Big fan of his. He's throwing that. So it's everything we talked about before. It's the DVD or / Blu-ray of season 4 of Walking Dead. It's my book. It's your choice of Bald Move t-shirt, your choice of Chibi, Funko, Walking Dead figure, and your choice of a selection from Richard's merchandise. All you got to do to enter is be a Patreon or Subbable member. And Subbable, you can subscribe for free. So there's no reason not to sign up.
Yeah.
What we do is we take a random winner from our combined list of Patreons and Subbable subscribers, and we notify you. So we've got two more contests. I think this is there's only one more after this one. So there's two more chances to win. Get your stuff in. We'll do another drawing this coming Tuesday and announce another winner.
Yep, definitely. All right, fuck your promotion. Let's get to this movie, man. Let's talk about some of the characters up front. I fucking love the main character's name, which what I think is the main character, the military guy. His name is Sergeant Nicotine Crockett.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not a badass name?
It's pretty. I didn't know his name. I just heard the Sarge. My favorite character is Tomboy.
Okay. Yeah. The lesbian.
Sure. Non-fist bumping in this case. She is by far the most badass.
Yeah.
She's got some of the best lines. Mm-hmm. She actually survives. What's not to like?
Sure. And she has a meaningful relationship in this movie with a Francisco, I think his name is, who's the guy who gets bit or actually does some biting. No, Francisco. he bites a zombie's finger off and turns into one himself.
Yeah, so there's an inversion of type. It's usually a zombie bites you. This is a Soviet Russia.
You bite the zombie?
Yeah, and get infected.
They have a pretty good on-screen relationship here.
Which
I liked. Yeah. I mean, it's a little... Okay, so it's a little...
It got real at the
weird,
end.
But yeah, overall, I think they had a connection that I felt was real.
Yeah, it was born of mild sexual harassment, forged in zombie fighting, and then cemented in a suicide pact, a murder pact?
Yeah, kind of.
So, yeah, okay, I'll give you
but
that.
But she was shedding a tear, so she obviously liked the guy.
Sure.
And I thought that came through on the screen. There are a lot of other characters in this movie.
Lots of characters.
Patrick O'Flynn, who is the what did you even call him? Is he a protagonist?
I don't know who the heroes of this movie are. I thought that the...
Are there any?
I thought the O'Flynns were the ones I was most sympathetic to because he was all about, in the beginning of the movie, killing zombies.
Yeah.
And the Seamuses, what's his last name?
Muldoon.
The Muldoons were all about protecting the zombies because they're our loved ones and they need to be rehabilitated, which I think, of course, is fucking stupid.
They're dead. Yeah.
So I was rooting for the O'Flynns. But then at the end of the movie, it's like they turn it on its head and it openly invited us to question whether that was the correct way to view it.
Yeah.
I kind of call shenanigans and bullshit, but that's me.
Yeah, I mean, the end of this movie very much wants you to say, are there any heroes in this? Is this just stupid from every single side?
Yes.
And that's your answer?
It is stupid from every single side. Right. Well, I mean, so do we want to get right into the main theme, the social consciousness?
Sure. Why not?
Okay.
Let's do it.
So this is essentially the Hatfields and the McCoys. That set in a island that's just off coastal Delaware,
mm-hmm.
called Pond Island, I think. Plum Island,
which is actually in real life just off the coast of New York. So
okay, and it's settled by these like Irish Americans that have retained their entire Irish heritage to the point where I thought it was originally set in Ireland. And I'm like, that's an interesting.
Me
choice.
Too. Yeah, but then I was like, how do they get across the ocean on a ferry?
Right. And these people have been fighting for generations and have grudges. Of late, it's been a Cold War because you just can't kill people in 20th century America.
Mm-hmm.
But the zombie fever has sparked up a new conflict between the ones that want to preserve the dead ones and the ones that want to treat them as dead ones and bury them, you know, kill them and bury them.
Yeah.
And at the end of the movie, they basically state war is dumb, fighting is dumb.
Yeah, and they do that by killing the leaders of both sides of this conflict.
Yep.
And showing them still going at each other's throats as zombies after the fact.
Because that's one
of not the... even they fight to the death. They fight beyond the death.
Right, and they're just firing forever empty
And now it's
guns.
Completely futile because yes. they can't kill each other. So,
but I thought it was interesting because there was a clearly correct side here. If you go buy into the movie logic, one guy said that these dead people are gone.
Yeah.
We've got to shoot them in the head and put them in the ground. The other guy's like, no, we can teach them to not eat people, and this is just a different way to existence, and we'll... And you know, it's not good to just throw away these people. Mm-hmm. The end of the movie, they show the zombies learning to eat animals other than humans.
They do eat the horse, yeah.
So that implies that the Muldoon character was correct.
Yeah.
And he was right to fight for the I don't know what you call it, the cultural heritage of the dead ones, or...
Yeah.
Their right to exist as undead.
Yeah, it's interesting
but
because
that's crazy.
Like at the very beginning of this movie, the kind of central problem, like you said, is one side wants to kill them, one side doesn't. Mm-hmm. Patrick O'Flynn is the guy who wants to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But they make a big deal about saying, would you kill if it was one of your own? Would you put that person down?
Yeah.
And then at the end of the movie, he sees his daughter is bit by a zombie, and he comes up and he shoots her in the head. And he says, look, I would do it.
Yeah.
I did it, as a matter of fact. And she was right in the middle of the speech telling these people that she had saw her sister take a bite of the horse, mm-hmm. and that there was hope mm-hmm. for them. And he guns her down before she can say that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's kind of an irony to that.
Sure.
Where, yes, it's possible, but we don't know it's possible because of our own... our own unwillingness to believe it, I guess.
Hmm. Or the fact that we're so caught up in fighting, it's no longer important who's right and who's wrong. It's just the fighting that goes on eternally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like I said, I don't know if I can get behind the concept of all war is dumb.
Sure. But Romero's point here is I think, based on interviews I saw.
Okay.
I don't know that he comes right out and says this, but I think he's saying that we jump to war very quickly as a solution to problems that might be solved in other ways.
But even then, it's like, I don't know that so zombies are useful for a lot of things, and Lord knows Romero's used them to criticize racism.
Yeah.
He's used them to criticize commercialism. He's used it, you know, I listened to your Diary of the Dead, and he's using it to criticize our increasingly insular internet culture.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can create... It's a clunkier metaphor here because, you know, what's the option of not rushing to judgment here with zombies? Like, as a direct result of Muldoon's experiments, many, many people die.
Yeah.
And even he is kind of, like, not consistent in how he practices his zombie saviorism.
Yeah.
Like there's small, you know, it's like he really only cares about the people he's related to.
Yeah.
Everybody else is kind of fodder for his scientific experiments, or mm-hmm. not even scientific. There's, you know, good old boy.
Yeah. And a lot of the time he's
animal
not even
training is what it is.
Experimenting. He's like, oh, they're not my kin. Kill them. They're not my kin. They're not whatever he calls them, like the useful ones or the ones that show potential.
The show promise.
Yeah. And so he kills them just straight away.
Right. So it's like, you know, a zombie plague, I think, is something that you have to kind of act swiftly on. You can't just, like, debate about, well, this person eating my arm, you know,
uh-huh.
I don't know if he's got... And Romero complicates it because in his universe, zombies do have echoes of their former lives.
Sure, yeah.
Like, they show mailmen zombies still trying to deliver mail. They show zombie that loved riding horses in life still riding a horse eternally across the countryside.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff, I can't tell if he's actually making a point with it or if he's carrying it over from his other films, the points he's made previously.
Right.
Because that has always been a thing with Romero, where sometimes the zombies represent humans.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they don't. They represent forces in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to actually tell which one is going on here or if they're both present.
Right.
You know? So yeah, I mean, there's probably a lot more digging to be done there as far as social commentary.
The other thing that I think undermines the social commentary is just how much ludicrous stuff is going on. Like the tomboy, the first time we meet Tomboy, she is just openly masturbating in a Jeep in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the night of the zombie, in the middle of the zombie apocalypse.
She gets no privacy. Like, okay, let's talk about the world here for a second.
Okay.
The world of Survival of the Dead is one in which the zombie apocalypse has completely removed any safety or free time that anyone ever had. Like, they are constantly on the lookout for the undead.
Except for Muldoon, who enjoys drinking scotch on his porch in his rocking chair.
He's on an island. He's probably cleared out most of that thing by now.
I guess.
Or captured him and in the barn. All right. But in the real world, on the mainland, that's the scenario. They have no free time because there is constant death around every corner. And yet YouTube or some similar service is still running.
Yeah.
The lights on the highways are still working. People are manning these systems.
Sure.
They've also set up the concept that money is worth nothing.
Yeah.
In this world. How do you reconcile the idea that people are still doing their jobs at YouTube with the idea that money is worth nothing? Are they paying them in bullets?
And one of
and if they are, how are they getting the bullets to pay these people with? Like,
And also, there's another kind of weird paradox is if money means nothing, and we certainly don't see goods being exchanged or anything like that. It's all very scavengy, survival-y. The core, one of the core MacGuffins of the movie is the soldiers deciding what to do with this $1.3 million they found in an armored car.
Right. And that's a major tension between some of the characters.
And another, like, I feel like that even I think Romero just doesn't give a shit about these details because it's like in one version of the script, it was a heist. Mm-hmm. And then he decided to tack on this Hatfield versus McCoy's. And even one of the soldiers says, like, the money in this is worth nothing. The value is in the vehicle itself. It's an armored truck, which is true.
But then at the end of the movie, he's like, yeah, we can take this $1 million and go
and run,
create a new life. And I'm like, how?
Are you going to build money out of the stacks of cash? Are you going to burn it to keep warm?
It's are we so going to weird.
like when we're making that joke about Daryl stuffing money into the satchel and from the country clubs? Like, are you just going to, for the novelty of wiping your ass with $100 bills? What? It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
It doesn't. I think the new currency after Diary of the Dead is YouTube hits. I think that's the main currency they use now.
I'll trade you 150,000 followers for a case of ammo.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I guess.
That was always a problem I had with Diary of the Dead as well. Because how does the video that these kids made get 2+ million views in a world where 90% of the population is dead?
Right.
It just doesn't add up.
Yeah.
So that was the same problem I had here, and even bigger problems.
Do you think that, because one, I overheard you're doing your research and you're listening to Romero reviews, and one thing he said is there's a tension between the fans of his work that's primarily about, how did he put it, about the social commentary.
Uh-huh.
They like that aspect of it, and then there's some fans that just like the gonzo zombie porn.
Yeah.
And do you think he's having a hard time consistently delivering? Like, should he try to concentrate on, I'm going to make a schlocky film, and it's just going to be wall-to-wall blood, guts, and gore, and exploitative sex appeal and all this stuff. And then the next movie, I'm going to go, and it's going to be a serious Night of the Living Dead, Day of the Dead.
Oh, so split
social commentary.
Split his time between those two ideas, but not in the same movie?
Yeah, because it just seems like one undercuts the other. And they're also fan bases that are at direct odds.
So do like a studio does, where they make a big blockbuster and then fund a bunch of indie films, right?
Sure. Yeah. Or, and I don't know, maybe spin it off and use the serious stuff is still of the dead, and then maybe he has a different brand for the other. But I just felt like...
the dead.
I couldn't get a consistent bead on this one. Like, just when I was about ready to turn my brain off and switch into just, oh, well, there's a guy sticking a fire extinguisher hose in a zombie's mouth and exploding his eyeballs out.
Yeah, that's a problem I have with a lot of modern Romero stuff. I mean, even in Land of the Dead, anything beyond like the original three, he's kind of had an issue with tone there.
Mm.
And I think it's because he's trying to appease all of those fans, whereas I don't think he did in the first three. I think he was just like, I'm making these movies, I'm doing my thing, and if people enjoy them, they enjoy them.
Yeah, I just don't know, because there's just a lot of... I feel like he just didn't give a shit on a lot of levels, because there's a lot of things, like there's unnecessary twists. For example, the one, the O'Flynn has a daughter.
Yeah.
We see her ride, when we come back to the island, we see her riding, she's dead and she's a zombie and she's riding a horse.
Very confusing. I thought, oh man, his daughter must have died in the interim.
But then we see that he has a twin daughter that is perfectly healthy, and she comes out later in the movie. It's like, oh yeah, I've got a twin. Like, why?
Exactly. Why? And also, if you blink, you miss it.
Yeah.
Like, I was very confused the first couple of times I watched this movie, because it wasn't very explicit, or it was explicit, but it went by so fast. I couldn't tell what was going on.
Right.
Yeah, that's a problem. What about your favorite? Do you have a favorite character? I'm sure you have a favorite part of this movie.
Like, no, it's definitely Tomboy.
Okay. All right.
What's yours?
I can see that. I don't know. I kind of like the kid for some reason.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. What's wrong with him?
I don't know. It's like, who's the guy that played Jesse Eisenberg?
Yeah. Yeah.
He combines all of his arrogance and acerbicness mm-hmm. with none of his charm. And that combination is very off-putting.
Okay. I didn't see it that way, but all right.
And, like, he's just this arrogant little pissant, and he's, you know, always shining on this soldier who for some reason takes a shine to him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Why did you like him?
I didn't think he was as abrasive as you thought he was. I mean, yeah, he's cocky, but he's apparently fairly good with a gun. Yeah. I don't know. I just like him.
Okay.
I like Patrick O'Flynn for some reason. Like, he's very charismatic.
Plus, he's just got the Irish accent.
And it's the accent.
And it's, like, just so stereotypically, ah, sure, to the morning, top of the morning, gift of the gab, Blarney's dude. I mean, it's just the lilting thing all the time.
Yep.
And I love how many times do you think in this movie Seamus and O'Flynn, or Muldoon and O'Flynn called each other bastard?
A lot. They call the walkers bastard, or the zombies bastard.
But each other in particular. It's like, that's their favorite thing. You arrogant bastard.
I'll kill you, dead.
You crazy bastard. you motherless bastard. I just, so many times, that was just the fresh thing. And it's always, they took umbrage at it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, bastard's a pretty nasty insult.
Sure, but they're 65 years old or so. I feel like after the millionth time you've called, like, if you called me a bastard 5 times a day, at some point I'd become used to it. It just wouldn't have the same sting it did when we first met.
We're going to experiment with that. The other thing about this that's weird, we've talked, you know, it's very strange that we have a lot of people from Southern America, you can tell.
Sure.
Being sent over to this island that is apparently run by first-generation Irish immigrants.
None of the aforementioned people from the armpit of Alabama, how it's described, have any trace of Southern accent.
Yeah, the main character says, I was born and raised in Southern Alabama.
Dalmatian, a town so pitiful, we named it after the fire chief's dog.
And he says this with no accent whatsoever, as I can tell.
Uh-huh.
None of that makes sense. None of it.
Sure.
So, I don't know. I would be hard-pressed to find a place in America where they do speak with the thick Irish accent, right?
I think you can find it. Some places in Boston.
Uh-huh.
But
they're few and far between.
Sure, sure. Like, I was telling you, it's like, this movie reminded me a lot of Beaver Island, which is an island I like to go to in the middle of Lake Michigan. It's called North American's Emerald Isle. And it was initially settled by a bunch of crazy Mormon separatists, but they were run out by Irish Catholics at the turn of the previous century, 20th century, and they turned into a fishing village. But you go there now, 2014, and other than all of the Flanagans and all
the names,
names and the fact that almost all the bars are very proud of the Irish tradition.
Yeah.
There's several Irish bars, but nobody has a brogue.
Yeah.
Nobody's top of the morning. And I mean, they're all just Americans.
Sure.
It's been, after 4 or 5 generations, it just goes away.
Yeah.
Unless you work to keep it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting myself.
Yeah, definitely.
And
weird.
Then why? Why did he choose to have that kind of, because like Hatfield McCoys, that's an American, that's an Appalachian thing, man. Like, you don't need to have some kind of Irish blood feud.
I know, we have
back
it right
to the
here.
Days of Braveheart to tell that tale if you want to.
Yeah, and here's the thing. So this movie is kind of based off, or inspired by, let's say, a movie called The Big Country by William Wyler. Romero said that when they went to make this movie, they had everybody sit down and watch that movie, and that's kind of the style he was going for. In that movie, everyone has the Southern accent that you would expect out of American blood feuds. No Irish to be found.
So do you think
I don't know why he said it the way he said it.
Do you think Romero said, I want to set this apart from the film?
Probably.
But one of the things I really liked was the regional dialect, so I'm going to just import something.
Maybe. I don't know. He didn't mention anything about exactly why he changed it to
Irish.
Well,
the other thing, in all the clans, the Irish clans, the only two people with the really crazy Irish accents are the two old guys. The old guys' daughters
don't
have it.
That's why I say their first generation, his kids are like second generation and like went to prep school somewhere else and like lost their accent.
But none of the other older members, because in the beginning of the film, there's like, you know, these vigilante gangs rounding up zombies against people's wins, because in this universe, if you got a zombie, like, you just don't know how to handle it. The first time your loved one comes back, you just want to chain them up in their bed, and preserve them for some reason. That's, I feel like that again. That's the Romero is kind of falling into his own Batman origin story. Where goddamn, how many times can we see Bruce Wayne lose his parents and the pearls hit the cement and all that?
Yeah,
Romero's got the same thing with this whole reluctance to kill our dead ones. None of the older community in that even had, like, all of the captain, they called him the captain too, which never made any sense.
Yeah. Captain Patrick,
all of his followers that were all old crusty dudes didn't have Irish accents either.
No,
it's really weird.
Maybe they were his deckhands and his mates on the ship that he ran before this. How about that?
Sure. I get that.
Okay. There were a lot of really cool kills in this. I'm not a ton, but
some,
you know, three,
ones.
Four, some very good ones, some very creative ones. Right off the bat, at the beginning, you get a zombie who comes up and attacks some people, and then they blast its head off at close range. But when they do, most of its head in the middle, its face, just explodes right out, completely gone. The top of the skull does a little flip, and then lands back on
the
next stump.
Uh-huh.
And it's just hilarious, but kind of awesome, too.
It's, yeah, lots
and,
of...
And the CG, not so great, but...
A little shaky.
But it works.
That wasn't CG, that was pure composite. That was like Steven Spielberg exploding the French guy's head in Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's you could see where the shot switched to paper mache.
They just put a pumpkin in there and blew it up.
Exactly.
What other kills did you like?
I already talked about the fire extinguisher guy. That was really cool. And it just, his eyes popped out of his head and kind of googled because they were not
the
like
nerves.
They were not hanging by the optic nerve. I feel like that they're poking out in like wires because you kind of see him like wiggle and wobble around.
Yeah.
The other one that I really liked was when the, what'd you say his name's? Testicles. Testosterone?
Francisco.
Sergeant Testicle Testosterone.
Oh, nicotine...
Gasoline.
Nicotine Crockett.
Okay. Nicotine crotch rocket. He shot a flare right into his zombie's head.
Yeah.
Which then inexplicably made his head glow and then burst into flames like a match head. And his zombie's just sitting there not knowing what to do. And then the guy... It looks like Ghost Rider, right?
Uh-huh.
That's exactly the effect it looks like. He goes and lights his cigarette off of this flaming skull and then shoves him into the water. That was really cool.
That was super cool, yeah. I feel like there were some others, but I don't remember them specifically.
How about the one guy that I've never seen a guy get eaten by a zombie despite somebody. Like the ranch hand that was that, what'd you say, is Muldoon entrusted with ranching his zombies in the barn?
Yeah. He shot him a couple times.
Yeah, he shot him, but then he just fell to the ground, and as he was being slow, he had a gun. He could have shot himself in the head and put him and ended it.
Yeah.
But he's like, I forget what he shouted. He's like, enjoy it, Muldoon. Yeah. It's your last shot, as these zombies are just tearing him apart. And like, they literally
you see
did.
This? This is going to be you in a minute, or something like that.
I know.
See what I've done? See what I'm doing?
Yeah. I'm going to ride this painful death out through the bitter end.
And it was painful. Yeah, they eat out all of his guts. They pull his spine out. They rip him in half. Yep. They drag it off.
Yep.
Oof. That was horrific.
Brutal. Pretty brutal.
So I don't know. What else do you want to say about this movie, man?
The other thing, if you watch this movie, during the exiling of O'Flynn at the beginning of the movie, I want you to watch the gunman that's on the extreme right.
Oh, yes.
Note that he looks like he's having an epileptic fit,
mm-hmm.
holding this gun, and his gun is pointed directly at the head of what looks like a crusty, aged version of Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
He's having a full-on fit,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't tear my eyes away from him. I'm like, who gave that man a gun?
Yeah.
How is Crocodile Dundee not caring that this guy, who's having an elaborate series of neurological issues, is standing behind him with a loaded weapon?
Yeah, I'd put him up front. Use him as a meat shield, too. At least he might hit something.
Oh, man. I had a lot of fun watching this, though, because, like, I remember, because the whole, in my opinion, this whole film was a sequence of what the fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the dead girl rides by on a horse, you pause the movie and you say something I will never forget. You said, this is where the movie gets really confusing. And I just laughed, like, oh, no, I'm doomed. I don't know what to do. Should I shit? Go blind? Is both an option? I don't know.
Get eaten by a zombie out of spite.
That yeah. could work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. This is my least favorite of any of the Of the Dead movies. And I will probably not watch it again.
I'm saying.
I don't think I need to.
Do you think that this is the movie that killed Romero's movie career?
Because I don't know that he's done.
I listened to a lot of reviews, and he was saying that he had plans to make two more spinoffs.
Yeah.
Because this is a loose spinoff of Diary of the Dead.
Kind of. So the character Nicotine Crockett is actually not named
Gasoline Rocket
in Diary of the Dead. He does not have the same name. I think he's just called Commander or something. And he stops the main characters along the road, and he steals a bunch of supplies from their RV, and he takes off. That's all you ever see of him.
Sure.
So brief cameo in Diary of the Dead. Also brief cameo in Land of the Dead.
No.
He's a brewbaker. He gets killed by a zombie.
All right.
Random military guy.
But anyway, in the interview, he mentioned that he had an idea for two more kind of light spinoffs of this series that, depending on how the movie does at the box office, you know, will or will not get made. This Ooh. Movie performed terribly at the box office. This movie was a stinker. It was a bomb. Romero's not getting any younger.
No, he is not. As a matter of fact, he's getting older.
How old is he now?
He's got to be old. He's got to be nearing 70. At least, I'd say.
Okay.
He's
74.
He's 74?
And the
wow.
man looks like a toupee and a beard wearing an enormous pair of goggles.
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen a modern picture of him. Wow.
He was for a long time. I don't know if he is now, but he was a chain smoker. So his health can't be great.
How tall do you think George Romero is?
6'3".
He's 6'4".
Wow. Okay.
I would never have suspected that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he wears pants that are 1'2", so.
Really?
Yeah, I've just seen him in interviews where he crosses his legs, and the pants will ride all the way up to his knee. It's crazy.
Well, he does. He looks like the kind of guy that might hike, do the little mid up to the nipple hike, too.
And this is all in fun. I respect George Romero immensely. Great filmmaker, at least up until this one.
Yeah, I'm not. I have no room to talk in my personal dress and grooming habits.
Sure.
But you're afraid of George Romero. Look at you.
Am I?
Look at you. Like just all good fun, George. Don't hurt me.
I still think he could take me.
He is 6'4".
Yeah.
It's how a heart attack and collapse on you, and it's all over. I don't know. I'm kind of worried that it might be it. Like, I mean, maybe Kickstarter is his salvation.
I don't think that's it. You know, I think. So the reason he made this, movie so quickly after Diary of the Dead, just 2 years later, is because Diary of the Dead was kind of a return to low budget stuff. He got funded by this company called Artfire Films.
Sure.
And he did Diary of the Dead, and he spent so little money on that, and it was actually a decent film, and it came out and it made a whole bunch of money for Artfire and for Romero, presumably. So they said, let's do this again.
Okay.
And I feel like Romero didn't have the ideas that he needed. He wasn't ready. His previous films have been so long between each other that he had time to come up with new ideas.
What about Land of the Dead, though?
Land of the Dead 2005,
then Diary of the Dead came in 2007, Survival came out in 2009.
But here's the thing, like, he made Diary of the Dead for a reason. Like, he saw a trend in media consumption and said, I have an idea at the core of this film, let's do it. This time they came to him and they said, let's do this again because it was so successful.
Okay.
So I feel like this was a rush job, like he didn't get a fair shake on it, and probably shouldn't have done it. It was just more of a cash-in.
Hmm.
I don't think that kills his career. I think he just needs to go back to the drawing board and kind of analyze how he, you know, at 74 years old, he needs to start fresh again.
Sure.
Right?
It wouldn't be nice to see him kind of redeem. You know, you want to see a guy like that go out on top, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Don't want to see him limping off onto, limping away from Pog Island or whatever it is.
Pog Island.
Yeah,
that's
you want to see him limping away on the ferry from Pog Island.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
How did they get, question for
interestingly,
you.
Interestingly, before we move away from that ferry,
okay.
That ferry is a real ferry. That's the real name of the ferry, and I don't know if they rented it or whatnot.
I believe
but,
it.
Yeah.
It looks just,
I think it's called the Amherst Islander.
Yep, it looks just like the Beaver Islander, which is the ferry that goes to Beaver Island.
Yeah, but
there's only like one company that makes ferries in this world. They're just like just churning them out, and that's what you order a ferry and you get a fucking ferry.
Yeah.
It's how big you want the ferry, but it's always going to be a fucking ferry.
Yep.
I think that, a question for you.
Yeah.
So, Sisko, Thong Song guy,
mm-hmm.
he's the one that's able to pilot the ferry over to island to begin with.
Yeah.
It's not trivial, I'm sure, to operate a ferry. At the end of the movie, they bug out back across the water with the armored car, but Sisko's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Did they just attach pontoons to that thing, and did they figure out a way to drive across water?
They did, yeah.
Again, I don't think Romero cares, but...
Little did they know, yes, you can actually drive those on
armored
water.
Cars float.
Yeah.
Their buoyancy is surprisingly high. Mm-hmm.
And their tires are equipped with paddles, so...
They run flat, they run wet, anything you got at them, they'll run.
No, so here's my guess, is they figured out, like, so the main guy, Nicotine Crockett,
mm-hmm.
wanted to go swim out to that ferry and just figure it out. But Francisco said, no, I have the experience. I can do it.
Yeah.
And so he knew how to pilot the boat.
Sure.
To drive the boat. And so he did it. But I think the other guy could have figured it out, right? How hard
like,
is a boat?
It's like Taken 20. You know, he had the time. He was unhurried.
Yeah.
He was just able to fuck around with it as long as he needed to get it going.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go with that.
Anything else you want to talk about?
Nope.
Okay, cool. Well, let's call out a cast then. Not my favorite in the Romero series, but check it out if you haven't. It's worth at least half a watch.
Where all can they get that?
Good question. It was on Netflix, but I think it's been removed since because I watched it there maybe a month or two ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just because I was bored, had nothing better to do.
You can rent it on, no, you cannot. I don't think it's available as a digital. It's you can buy the Blu-ray, the ultimate collector's edition for $8.50 on Amazon.
Okay. Yeah, so, you know, go to baldmove.com, click the banner for Amazon, and go buy it.
Oh, no. Oh, you actually can. Survival of the Dead is one of their Prime Instant videos. So if you're an Amazon Prime member, queue it up. Watch it.
Yeah. Awesome. Do we have any pimping before we want to do... before we get out of here?
I mean, yeah, if you'd like to support what we're doing, I mean, the reason we're able to really blow this Month of the Dead thing out is because we're doing this full-time. Support us on patreon.com/baldmove or subbable.com/baldmove.
Get entered in those contests.
Get entered those contests. Go on amazon.baldmove.com and enjoy George Romero's Survival of the Dead and do all your shopping with us, and that's a way to support us. Rate and review us on iTunes. All the standard stuff. You can go to support.baldmove.com. If you'd like to find out all the ways, and if you just can't get enough, if all this stuff we're doing for the Month of the Dead isn't quite enough for you, book.baldmove.com. Check out my survival guide for season one of The Walking Dead. I would really appreciate you can preview most of the first chapter for free. If you got Kindle Unlimited, it's a free read for you. It's got no DRM, so you can buy it. It's shareable. It's lendable to other Kindle users. It's as open as you can get, and it's only $2.99.
Awesome. So next week we've got a very special episode, an even more special episode of the Of the Dead series, the movie reviews, because it is an episode that we recorded years ago when we were doing a podcast called Zombie Drill that we never released, and we're going to go ahead and release that. It's a Dawn of the Dead review from way back.
I don't remember doing... I mean, I remember...
I don't either.
I don't remember anything about it. I do remember quite a bit of The Dead Alive.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that movie stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it's set at the mall. I know that it opened with a carpet that looks surprisingly like intestines.
Sure. No, I remember a lot of the movie, but not the review of it.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. No, I'm kind of excited to re-experience it. And I think the audio quality was a little bit better on that one, too.
I hope so. Yeah. Because the first one was rough. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Tune in next week if you want to hear that Dawn of the Dead review. And until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya.